go around and say hi, starting with Bob K. Ellen, nice to see you. Mark W. Ken. Jim. Jinryu. Joan. Paulette. Marv. Shoketsu. Pat. Pat, you look like you're gonna go outside at any minute. Alice, Phil, John, Jeff, welcome, Peter, Linda, Brian, Sarah, Bob O, and Ruth Ann. All right. Thank you, everyone, for being here. In terms of announcements, let's see. I mentioned something about the August retreat. I have not changed the details of that on the website yet. But there will, if you look on the website, you'll see a August 23rd through 28th. And it might end up being like, that's a Monday evening through a Saturday. And it might end up being like a Tuesday morning through a Saturday or something. It might be a tiny bit shorter. But that same window of time, we will be doing a retreat. Mostly online. I am toying with the idea of getting our local Zendo up and running by that point. And then fully vaccinated folks could join us in the Zendo. Just people who've like registered for the retreat. So not just kind of an open door kind of thing, but so that some of it could be in person and then it would be Zoom hosted from the Zendo. So then you can participate, you know, from afar as well. But that the main thing, except I don't know, in the evening, maybe I might come back here in the evening. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, it'll be that's my thought, is that it'd be a hybrid kind of thing, because we had a reservation at a retreat center, but myself and Joshin and Shintai just, first of all, Shintai can't make those dates and it just seemed like too much to pull off. It's kind of like, it's going to take a while to come out of lockdown. That feels like coming out of lockdown and immediately doing a race. So, going to pace ourselves and do a lower key hybrid thing, but save the dates, because I can't recommend highly enough just the practice of putting everything down for a while and creating space for silence and stillness. I know I really, really need that. All right. Any questions or other things that I should mention? All right. Okay. So today's talk, what should I call it? Maybe the nature of practice. So I initially intended this to be on practicing with intrusive thoughts and emotions. That's something that I've heard come up with people in, you know, Sangha check-ins and discussions and whatever, that sometimes we end up with I'll go into what I mean by intrusive thoughts and emotions, but you can probably know what I'm talking about. I did give a talk on this 3 years ago, I found, and it's my podcast episode 70 is on this. So if after this you want to explore in more detail different ways you can practice with intrusive thoughts and emotions, you might want to check out that podcast episode. But as I was kind of reworking this to present it, I thought almost more about using this issue as a case study, if you will, and talking about some what did I call them? Requirements for effective practice. And I came up with four requirements for effective practice. So we're going to use that as a case study and talk about that. How do we practice with intrusive thoughts and emotions? But there's some more general lessons that hopefully you can take away. So again, by practice, I mean things we consciously choose to do to make with our own body, speech, and mind to make our situation better, to decrease suffering, increase ease, equanimity, wisdom, compassion, etc. And so, particularly in terms of intrusive thoughts and emotions, when we practice, we're looking for more freedom around these things, right? Some freedom from, so they're not in control of us and impinging on our lives or filling us with stress or depression or whatever. So, first of all, I'm going to just talk about a little bit more about what I mean by intrusive thoughts and emotions. So by intrusive, I mean they repeatedly arise and with enough intensity that they kind of take over the mind and enough to be disturbing or distracting. And they aren't generally objectively relevant at the time that they're imposing themselves. So if you're in a situation, you're dealing with stuff, right? It's natural and appropriate that that's first and foremost in your mind is responding to that situation. But this kind of intrusive thought and emotion experience is when, it's not directly relevant. And I would say it's not limited to thoughts and emotions, sensations, basic reactions of aversion or attraction can also be intrusive. And just thoughts and emotions cover the gamut of our internal experiences, positive and negative. Fears, worries, anxieties, obsessions, infatuations, resentments, preoccupations, fantasies, catastrophizing, hypersensitivity. So, examples are social paranoia. Sometimes intrusive thoughts and emotions are extremely disconnected from reality, and sometimes it is easier to recognize in other people than it is in ourselves. We've all probably had the experience of somebody, kind of obsessing over some concern, something that they've sure has happened, and from your perspective, you're like, I don't really know that you have the right read on the situation, right? But that is what they're very stuck in. Infatuation and excitement. I mean, so sometimes the subject matter isn't bad or troubling, but it's like, oh, now this thing is just, I'm obsessed with it. I can't think about anything else. Certainly practical difficulties, financial challenges, health challenges, family challenges. I mean, sometimes these kinds of things, I mean, these are quote unquote real, right? These are real problems. So it can be even harder to practice with these because part of us says, well, they should be intrusive. We should be obsessed and completely preoccupied with concerns. And yet we know from experience that even if there's something practical we need to deal with, rehashing it 24/7 and keeping ourselves up at night with it is not actually helpful. So even those things that are really important and need our attention can be inappropriately and intrusive. Certainly fear about something that might happen and we don't know if it's going to happen. So really, like, we can ask a qu couple questions, like, is this a situation of intrusive thoughts and emotions by asking a few questions, like, what is the result of your thinking? Are you getting anywhere? Are you reaching any greater clarity? Or is it just kind of rehashing and going over the same thing over and over? Because I mean, sometimes you need to think about stuff. It's a necessary part of processing, but that has a different quality to it. That is a quality that's you're making some progress. Do you find yourself perseverating, just thinking the same exact thoughts over and over and over? And is this causing stress, insomnia, depression, anxiety, health problems, etc.? So that's what I mean by intrusive thoughts and emotions. So this is an example of something that I presumably we want to practice with. We want to, I mean, I might be tempted to say get rid of intrusive thoughts and emotions, but I think we all know that that's a little bit too extreme and judgmental and violent in a way that's, we want to have some space around them, have some freedom, have some choice. So we're going to go into breakout rooms at some point. So if you're inclined at all, you might want to take notes about my four requirements. So the first requirement is recognition of what's going on. You might call this mindfulness. Okay, so most of the time we're very focused on the content of our thoughts and emotions, right? So we're thinking about this argument we had. This is what I found myself doing the other day. I had a disagreement with somebody in a meeting, and it kind of got heated. And afterwards, it's, I'm thinking about why he's being unreasonable and, what my point is, and in my mind just kept on going back and back and back. And I was doing yard work. There was no reason to be thinking about it, but I'm just keep on thinking, like, and he has an point that, how could he say that I was, doing this? And so clear, then it's like, oh, okay, look at that. Like, this is a situation where this thinking has become intrusive. This has become, I'm clearly upset and really trying to work this out. So we're noticing, we might notice a feeling of stress, anger, anxiety, depression, tightness in the gut or chest or shoulders, if you tend to cue into those physical cues more, nausea, lack of appetite, compulsive habits, inability to sleep, often signs that we're perseverating on something. Noticing our minds returning again and again and again to the same topics. And also sometimes a feeling of helplessness, like we can't control our mind. Like we might say, all right, there's no use in worrying about that. But then, bing, the mind goes back to it again anyway, like we have no say in the matter. So that step of recognition of mindfulness means we shift our attention from the content of the experiences to the experience itself. Or one way that my teacher Kyogen put it is like the space through which all of it moves. So this is just, and sometimes just this shift in perspective is enough to really shift the feeling tone of everything, to just we're changing our relationship to what's happening. And I think this is I was looking up the Tara Brach's, you know, reign, recognize, accept, investigate, nurture. And really a lot of that is this just this process of like recognizing, not leaping to judgments, noticing what's happening. And you know, to some extent it helps to label what's going on. Oh, intrusive thoughts and emotions, you know, because then we have a set of understanding and tools that we have to come into play. So that's the first requirement, is to recognize what's going on. So the second one, and this, I would say, these aren't as obvious, perhaps. This is what kind of came out when I was starting to think about this. Like what, you know, in my recent example, what did I need in order to move forward with this problem? And the second thing I noticed was that I had to start from a place of faith in practice. So the second one is faith in practice. Faith in my ability and capacity to do something to improve my situation, to do something to affect the state of my body, speech, and mind, at least my internal situation, and that there's something effective that could be done. And this is extremely important. I mean, and sometimes that faith might feel strong, sometimes weaker, but I would say if we lose any hope, we're unlikely to make progress with whatever we're working on. We're not unlikely to gain freedom from intrusive thoughts and emotions until they just kind of have their way with us and burn themselves out, and then we're just kind of sitting there vulnerable to the next thing that is going to come and obsess us. So this faith that, you know, I think it builds over the course of practice, but I know that I ended up gaining a lot of faith in practice right away. Sometimes maybe our faith in practice initially, we might even call it a honeymoon period, but I think it's real, right? That when we encounter the tools of practice, when we recognize what happens when we take some time to meditate, when we take some time to be mindful, when we try to follow the precepts, and it unlocks things in our lives that we weren't able to deal with before. Like, dang, wow. So I was, you know, when I first encountered practice, there were lots of things that I'd tried to change, I'd tried to deal with, and I felt like it was impossible. I just could not do it through sheer force of will. But with the tools of practice, I was able to make some headway, and that was like, wow, all right. So this faith that we can do something, it may not be easy. We may not know exactly what to do from the outset. The results may not be immediate. The results may not be exactly what we hope for or expect. We may need to persevere in our practice, as opposed to just, now I know what to do. I'll apply that practice and everything is fixed. We may have to just keep on doing it over and over in kind of a grueling way. And this faith in practice, it's faith, the faith that we can do something to affect our internal experience and our own behavior. So this is the sphere of our influence and choice. I would not say control, because that's dualistic, right? Because that's part of you's in charge and you're going to control your mind and body. But this is our sphere of some choice. We at least have some choices when it comes to our own mind, our own body, our own speech. So what our faith in is that we can do something within that sphere of influence, and it will change our experience, will change our internal experience, if you will. Says nothing about changing what's outside. So the third thing. So now you've recognized, there's something going on. I have some faith that I can do something about it. I have some faith in practice. And the third thing you really need is willingness. So even if you have faith in practice, even if you have some idea about what you might do, right? You might need to, you know, take a break or sit zazen or, you know, talk to a trusted friend or get some exercise or sleep or whatever. Like, you know, you have some ideas about what you might do in order to improve the situation. But it's not going to help if you're not willing to do it. Usually there's something intoxicating or compelling about our intrusive thoughts and emotions. And part of us wants to continue to indulge in them, even if they're painful, even if they're scary. There's part of us, like, either we have a sense of righteousness or we've almost got it figured out, then we'll have a master plan that will make everything work. Or we can't let down our guard. You know, this is a real problem and I can't for a moment let it go. So there's that pivotal moment of recognition. Something unhelpful is going on and I want things to change. I want to do something about it. And making that choice. Like, and I like looking at things like this. I really like looking at practice in terms of choice instead of discipline. For me, discipline is too dualistic and causes conflict within ourselves. When I take responsibility for my choices and I say, okay, I have been sitting in zazen ceaselessly thinking about my projects lately. Okay. And part of me can think, you know, I have just, my zazen's been bad. I need to try harder. And that's kind of the discipline approach, right? I'll try harder in my zazen. But if I look at it in terms of choice and I'm honest with myself, I can say, I want to think about my projects during zazen. I don't want to put them down. I don't want to just sit there. Okay. You know, I mean, now we have a place to start from, right? It's, I can acknowledge that that's there. All right. So I'm recognizing there's something going on. I know there's something I can do about it. And I go, okay, I'm willing to do something about it. So in a way, this is a form of renunciation, which is something that I think I want to do another talk on sometime soon. So literally and physically, right, Buddhist monks renounced worldly life. They renounced the household and relationships and money and all that kind of stuff. But the most important renunciation is renouncing that which causes suffering. Are we willing to let go of the things that cause suffering? As the Kyoju Kaimon says, they who release their suffering and embrace all beings are called the Sangha treasure. So in a very new, different way of looking at suffering as something that you're holding on to, and that you don't judge yourself or beat yourself up for not necessarily being able to let go of that immediately, but recognizing you can. You have it within your power to let go. So there's recognizing, faith in practice, and willingness. And the fourth is practice itself. And I'm thinking of practice in terms of the imperative form of the verb, not as a noun, but as in, like, now practice. Now pick something to do and do it. Because again, if you could know what would help the situation, but you don't actually do it, then that similarly is not going to work. And practice. So we're going to go into breakout rooms and talk about practices that anybody has found to be helpful in terms of dealing with intrusive thoughts and emotions, gaining some freedom around intrusive thoughts and emotions. So, what I'm defining as practice is conscious choice about what you do with your body, speech, and mind that can improve your internal situation regardless of what happens around you. So I'm going to copy and paste that and put that in the chat.
Question
Yeah.
before you go. Are you talking about intrusive questions and emotions during Zazen or just in general?
In general. Certainly during Zazen, but in general. So conscious practice being a conscious choice about what you do with your body, speech, and or mind that can improve your internal situation regardless of what happens around you. So, I mean, we can certainly argue about whether this sums up practice or not, but this is what I mean. So again, it's about conscious choice. It's about our body, speech, and mind, the only things that we have direct influence over. Again, not control, but we have some matter of choice in these things. And we're looking to improve our situation in terms of decreasing suffering, increasing a sense of freedom, ease, wisdom, compassion, all of those good things to improve our situation. But and I think this is really key, regardless of whether or not your circumstances change at all. That to me is the crux of the matter. Now, that's not to say there isn't a time and a place for trying to change your circumstances, for trying to have a conversation with somebody and improve your relationship, or to find a way to make some money and pay your bills, or to, decide what you're going to do with regard to your health condition or something like that. Obvious that is, entirely legit and something that we need to do. But this is what's truly empowering about practice, that it doesn't matter what happens outside. So, for instance, it's possible for you to change your you to change your mind and the way that, for instance, you relate to a particular person or what you're expecting from a particular person, and they don't have to change their behavior or attitude in any way. And yet your experience of it can be improved. You can find more space, you can find more freedom, you can find more acceptance. It's not to say, through sheer force of will, you can make everything perfect and nothing will bother you. But you can do something. You can do something to be more free in that situation. So the practice is not dependent on the actions or responses of others or changes in your circumstances. And practice can be, so we have three spheres of action: body, speech, and mind. And they're not actually separate, right? But that's one of the, so you can have an action, a physical action, you can have a action of expression, and you can have an action in your mind, right? So the ways that we think have an impact at the very least on what we're going to think next. And practice can be a shorter term or longer term. So practice can be something, is something that you do with your body, speech, and mind in this moment to just relieve that, like, just relieve symptoms, to just give yourself a break or get a different perspective or something. And practice can also be longer term, can be something that you choose to do. The body, speech, and mind, where, for instance, you really delve into why you react in a particular way and try to understand that and unpack that and maybe gain some insight about it that helps you learn a different way. So it can be a shorter term or a longer term thing. And it can be formal and informal. So formal meaning it can be Buddhist, you know, I sit Zazen, or I do chanting, or I, you know, do breath counting and pass a mala through my fingers or whatever. Or it can be informal and or formless or very personal. It can just be when I talk to this person, I try to imagine them as a small, vulnerable child. And that helps shift my heart in relation to them or something like that. So, so before we go into breakout rooms, and I'm going to suggest that each room choose a secretary and then come back and share at least one practice, because I feel like Sangha really learns, we really learn from one another. You know, I have my own way, I'm my own kind of person. So the ways that I practice might not be what works for you, but somebody else in the Sangha might actually have a suggestion that you go, oh yeah, I should really try that. So that each group would choose a secretary and then just come back and share one. So before we do that, any questions about practice? What we're talking about? Jinryu.
Not to put you on the spot or anything, but have you told us how you do it?
No, but I mean, I can share that afterwards.
Okay.
So I'm just going to put in the chat. I think some of you will at least be able to see the chat once you go into your breakout room. Some of you can't, but so practices for dealing with intrusive thoughts and emotions. And then I have my definition of practice up above. So I will invite you to, well, let me see. Let me do. There we go. All right, apologies to anyone who was cut off mid-sentence. I was. So, right. So, oh, let me share my screen so we can, so I can record what people share. Resize my screen so I can see everybody anyway. Okay, so go ahead and either unmute yourself or raise your hand. Sarah.
So in our group, the predominant consensus was a letting go of outcomes, or kind of removing the judgment about topics, to be very, very helpful.
Letting go. Cool. And I saw Peter next.
Yeah, I, the one person who had something that seemed like reportable mentioned a name, Eugene Gendlin, and the practice of called focusing. It was a practice called focusing. And then just so that I could evenly report on everybody, I asked for three words. And the only word that showed up more than once from all four of us was the word compassion. The other words were attention, practice, yielding, spacious, investigation, joy, peace, and faith in ourselves. That last one was mine, and I just said that when I really need it, I'm able to function. You know, not like I'm impervious to distractions, but things managed.
Cool. Alice?
Our group had different suggestions. I'm going to pick one. Radical acceptance for your situation.
And you could go ahead and share all of them.
Oh, okay. Radical acceptance for your situation and medication, actually. And then another group member talked about meta practice and emanating that kind of well-wishing to other parties. And then for myself personally, focusing on the minutiae or observing, shifting your mind from judging to just observing.
And I would even say what you described was kind of a finding a way to get in your body and out of your mind. You know, if you are focusing on something that's like sensory and just right in your environment, then you end up tending kind of shifting that attention away from the
self-talk.
Paulette.
Okay. In our group, we had a continuum of the idea that we should observe bodily responses. Whether noticing if it's whatever's happening is coming from the ego or from where is it coming from? And that's basically it. I think I talked about allowing whatever is there to be there. And we talked about staying with the feeling. But everybody agreed that to some extent that bodily sensations is a good place to go to get out of the mind.
Cool. Yeah. John?
We talked a lot about what to do during or in the wake of difficult interactions. And so we talked about metta as having perhaps that person in mind in the difficult person category and seeing what it's like to see if it softens your attitude towards them or lessens your fear of them. And then just like de-escalating situations when they're happening. One of the ideas was just telling yourself they're doing the best they can, just like I am.
Could I add to what I was in John's group, and I think basically what I shared and what John shared was responding to a situation rather than reacting.
Well, this is cool. I think this is when, you know, to get back kind of more generally to practice. This is what I think is so precious about Sangha, because when we get to together with Sangha, even though we have a wide variety of experiences and personalities and different things work for different people, we're all trying to practice in this sense of taking responsibility for our experience and having that fierce faith that we can do something. And I, you know, not to be critical of people who don't practice, but, you know, if you're having a conversation with somebody who doesn't practice, and they don't have to be a Buddhist, right? Sometimes I have just as much, maybe not just as much, but I have a lot in common with people of other faiths who nonetheless practice. Some of the most interesting spiritual discussions I had was with a friend who was a Jehovah's Witness. I totally disagreed with all of her beliefs and methods, but she was every day she was trying to improve her life and be responsible for her reactions and all this. So, you know, a lot of times when you're talking to somebody who doesn't practice and they have Either you don't bring up the difficulties, because if you don't have faith that you can do anything about them, why? So you bring them up to bitch about them, to blame other people, to complain, or you just don't bring them up because there's no point, because there's nothing you can do about them. So it's not usually a very fruitful discussion, right? Most of the time, if people are discussing maybe a difficult relationship, right, they're going to be talking about what's wrong with the other person and why they're right. You know, and we're tempted to do the same thing. But when we talk about practice, when we get together with Sangha members and we say, you know, how's your practice? What we're saying is, you know, what challenges and difficulties, or not even to look at it that negatively, what limitations in your understanding or growth or manifestations are you working on? Are you exploring in this way, looking for different practices that might help, learning how to recognize what's happening, learning how to work on your own willingness to do something about it? So I think that's, anyway, I guess I'll leave it there. Thank you everyone for participating. Let me, it's not letting me, there we go. Stop my share. I will close with our verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha, all Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Domyo. Thanks, all.
Thanks, all. Thanks, Domyo.
Happy, beautiful Sunday.
Ew.
Thank you.
You too, Jinru.